Okay, our next guest is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, focusing on U.S. foreign policy. He has been an advisor to six secretaries of state, both Republican and Democrat. He's authored five books. And as I said earlier, for the first time this week, we've been able to talk about local stuff more than World War III, if you will. But it's time for our next guest and longtime Drive Hall of Famer and dear friend of the show to bum us all out, former State Department advisor, Aaron David Miller. Aaron, how are you, bud?
Steve, you're great. You're great. And if you're looking for annoyingly negative analysis, you've come to the right place.
Yeah, well, I'll just turn it over to you. Where do we stand? What's going on? It's crazy.
Well, it's in many respects, it's a logical result of a series of steps that have been set into motion. There's no point in rehearsing the whole Megillah, so to speak. But the reality is the administration, for reasons that are not clear, a risk-averse president, decided several days ago to take a bold and very risk-ready step. I would argue, I don't want to make a, you know, I'm not writing a legal or moral brief for Qasem Soleimani, a lot of blood on his hands, just not yeah. just Americans. But it is intriguing. I thought to myself, when in the history of the Republic, the modern history of the Republic, has an American president ordered the targeted killing of an official, terrorist though he may have been, in another government, and then publicly claimed responsibility for it? I mean, this is not Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the head of what used to be the caliphate, or bin Laden. And the answer is, I cannot think of an example. In 1943, in an operation called Vengeance, the U.S. Navy downed a plane carrying Admiral Yamamoto. He was killed. It was a willful, intentional operation for payback for Pearl Harbor. That was a full-scale World War II. I can't identify a situation in which any American president has done that. So, but if you're going to do it, then you need to tether it to a set of circumstances and aspirations and a strategy. The problem is this was in many respects an untethered act, and what the administration is claiming that Americans are more secure. No, they're not. I mean, if they're secure, why did the Secretary of State order the evacuation of all Americans or
yeah.
warn that Americans should leave Iraq
right.
and then restrict access to the embassy? Americans are not more secure, and every intelligence analyst will tell you that, both with respect to cyber attacks here at home, proxy attacks by the Iranians. Our position in Iraq has deteriorated. Our operations against the Islamic State have now been compromised. Our cooperation with the Iraqi government has been compromised. We may well, even if we stay in Iraq, be so constrained and so worried about force protection that we're unable to carry out the mission that American forces are there charged with. So the issue is, what was this designed to achieve? Yeah, you take a bad guy off the battlefield. The question is tethering it to what set of objectives? And I think you must think about that in a place like the Middle East where there are no victories. I mean, the notion that a great power is going to be victorious in this part of the world, what does that even mean? George W. Bush, victorious in Iraq and Afghanistan? I mean, even the Israelis in 1967, one of the greatest military victories of all time, ended up, yes, with greater security, but over time, having territories that have cost them an extraordinary amount in terms of their own security and well-being. So in this part of the world, this is not World War II. There are no clear-cut outcomes. There are no clear-cut victories.
Yeah.
And yet this is the world in which the United States is now stuck. And, you know, like some modern-day Gulliver, we're wandering around in a region where this president really doesn't even want to be, tied up by powers large and small who don't share our interests, and driven by our own illusions, one of which is that if you apply enough pressure, the Islamic Republic is simply going to collapse or bend to Mr. Trump's will. And it won't. So this has triggered a series of, this is not one and done. I spent late midnight last night at CNN trying to argue that this is, it's not one and done. It's the beginning of a process. We've dodged a bullet, but like a bad penny, this is going to keep turning up.
It's like, okay, taking out the bad guy. All right. But there was no thought as to what was going to come afterwards, apparently.
Right, and the bad guy, as brilliant and as effective as Qasem Soleimani may have been, does not represent a ragtag group of jihadis living in a cave somewhere.
You're right.
He's part of an institution called the Revolutionary Guard, maybe 25,000, charged with force protection, regime protection, millions at their disposal, and they're part of the neighborhood. And we're not. And that's something that, you know, we are rapidly going to see. It just, one example, we're training the Iraqi security forces. And sadly, tragically, in Afghanistan, you've seen what happens when Afghan trainees, for reasons that are unclear, allegiance to the Taliban, angry, religiously motivated, who knows, turns their automatic weapons on their trainers. So what happens if an Iraqi Shia on a training mission with a group of American servicemen or women essentially are killed? I mean, we are setting ourselves up, I suspect, given the fact that the Soleimani file is not closed. This is not the beginning, not the end of Iranian payback.
Exactly.
This will occur over months, if not years.
Aaron David Miller is with us. You wrote an article that will be up on CNN.com later. You sent Mike a copy, which I'm looking at. He printed out, and this looks fascinating. I can't wait to read the whole thing. One of my favorite parts already, though, let me quote your article. In fact, watching Tuesday night's Iran crisis play out, I was reminded of the joke about the guy who jumps off a 10-story building, and as he's passing the fifth floor, someone yells out, "How you doing?" He says, "So far, so good."
Well, that's America in the Middle East, seriously.
Yeah.
We just have to be very sober and very measured about what we're confronting. And I would just argue, having worked for Republicans and Democrats and voted for them too, that any metric or measure of the success of this operation will be achieved and will be evaluated only over time. And in the end, since we're not going to overthrow the Iranian regime and they're not going to bend to our will,
right,
eventually we're going to have to enter into not a transformational relationship. I mean, this is a serial human rights abuser. Other than China, they execute more people every year than any other country in the world. I mean, but we've dealt with authoritarian regimes before. Look at the president's best friend. I mean, Kim Jong-un. He gets love letters. Far more authoritarian.
Yeah.
Kim's hermit kingdom is than the Iranian Republic, where there are actually real politics and protests. So, I mean, again, I'm not writing a brief for the Iranians. I mean, and frankly, they don't deserve one. But we got to be smart here and figure out not just what's right, but also what works for American interests. And that's presumably what the president is charged to do.
Yeah. Read Aaron's article. Any idea when it's going to be up on CNN?
Should be up tonight. I've got to go. I'm going on CNN at 9 with Chris Cuomo to talk about exactly what I'm talking to you about.
Oh, well, that's 6 o'clock our time. We'll be watching here. Our great friend, Drive Hall of Famer Aaron David Miller, senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and a longtime author. A State Department Middle East analyst with State Departments in both Democratic and Republican administrations. Aaron David Miller, bless you, sir. Thank you so much.
Steve, always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks. All right.